What's up, everybody? This is Carrick with ACG, and welcome to a podcast I have not named yet. This will be numbered differently than the other podcasts, so if you want to skip these, you'll be able to figure out which ones you can skip, and if you want to jump into these, you'll absolutely be able to. What are these going to be about? My other passions, but the main one, role-playing. When it comes to video games, I've always been a huge fan, but prior to even video games existing, I was a huge fan of pen and paper role-playing, D&D to the old Grognards, any other kind of various different systems that we have now to you who are newer to it. It's been three decades, it's been longer than three decades, where I've been the GM slash DM slash creator of various worlds for my friends, friends that I've known for years that have dropped off, as well as friends who've been there since day one. And we're going to talk about that kind of stuff. We're going to talk about role-playing. We're going to talk about all this. Now, this probably won't be as popular as a video game podcast, and I absolutely get that. But it is a passion of mine, and you guys know, especially when I'm doing the video game podcast, we have a tendency to stray a little bit, right? But I don't get a chance to stray to role-playing when it comes to pen and paper, when it comes to board games, something else we'll talk about. And I ask you to just sit back and maybe listen to this for a couple minutes. One of the major reasons why it's very difficult to jump into role-playing pen and paper when you're in a video game podcast is, well, the wordage, the verbiage, the nouns, the consonants, everything that you fucking use when it comes to descripting and describing these things can easily overlap and become confusing. You can say role-playing and somebody thinks you talk about Witcher 3, which if there's a role-playing game, pen and paper, that has to do with Witcher 3, it can become even more confusing. So I've purposely strayed a bit away from doing that. This podcast, I'm not going to do that. I would love for you to jump in here, comment, tweet if you can. We'll do the hashtag podcast1. That's what we're going to do. Hashtag podcast1 if you got this far. It's only a minute in, 2 minutes in. So if you got this far, you can hashtag and then you can leap out, whatever you want to do. Share to your friends. What are we going to be covering in these? All kinds of stuff. Today, though, I want to discuss a little bit and give you some tips and pointers that I've had when it comes to world building, character building, rules and rule sets, and introducing new game players. I especially think when it comes to role-playing, a lot of people see the various critical roles in other shows on Twitch and they think, oh, that's D&D. And it can be for some groups, but for the majority, it actually isn't. And you'll hear that. A lot of people will say that. But a lot of people will just simply say, don't expect yourselves to be as good as this group. But they don't tell you exactly what you should expect from yourself. And a lot of times people say, hey, it's all great if you're just having fun. That is true to a point, but additionally, at least when you're starting, I think it's good to also understand a bit about the rule segments, a bit about what everybody's sort of expecting so that you can have a shared knowledge of things. Because when you look at Dungeons and Dragons, when you look at pen and paper, Savage World, Vampire, Werewolf, Warhammer, Fantasy, Warhammer 40,000, all of these different games, Elric of Melanboney, you have all of these different games and they can be quite confusing. Or you're just playing Rifts and you can't figure out what the rules are because they fucking suck. Sorry, Palladium, but your rules are terrible. So let's begin. I think I should say right away, expect some overlap between pen and paper and video games as I continue in these discussions, but I'll try to solidify it down just to pen and paper. Right now, I want to talk about onboarding of newcomers, including yourself if you decide to, some of the risks, the rewards that you may get, some of the things that are said that sort of color the actual result. It's like the old scientific test of the cat in the box. Is it dead or alive? Well, one of the problems is whenever you come at something from any particular angle, you are affecting the result a little bit. And that certainly happens when we're talking about pen and paper and how you get into it. So let's talk about onboarding. The first thing I want to do is set a couple words down for you so that you understand where we're coming from. The first is role-playing versus role-playing. And you're thinking, what? Role-playing, R-O-L-E, and role-playing, R-O-L-L-playing. Now, you will have people who are like, I don't like those words because one sounds worse than the other, or it makes it sound like one is better than the other. They're wrong. You should do that because it's absolutely true. One is better than the other. Whatever works for you. We are so enraptured in the desire to protect those words, and I see this all the time, or the desire to say everything is right and everything can be perfect, that a lot of people can become quite confused because a lot of ways in which things are described, people don't realize not every system works for everybody. And understanding how to identify where you are is really the best way to start. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong at all. And I'm here to cut through a lot of the bullshit. I hear this in my own groups. I hear it on most YouTubes I see where people are talking about this and you get this split and it just bothers me. Again, these are just my opinions. Other people are going to disagree. That's fine. That's why I'm doing this video, because I disagree. So ROLE and ROLL plane, what do they have in common? What are they different? Why do I use those terms? It's very easy for me. ROLE plane is all the way to your left. That's your theater, right? That's your werewolf game where y'all sit in the around a corner and you try to figure out who's the werewolf at night and there's almost no rules. That's your amber dice role-playing system for people who do know a little bit about D&D. That's your far left, almost to the point to where it's storytelling around a campfire, and there's nothing wrong with that. And then all the way to the right, let's push role-playing, R-O-L-L. Let's push that as far to the right as humanly possible until we get to liar's dice, right? Until we get to a game that is basically just dice. That's as far crunchy as you can get. And the gray area in between, guess what? That's where the learning is. That's where a lot of newcomers come in. So understanding, just at the very least, that you have your ROLE in the far left and you have your, in your far left, yeah, your ROLL on the far right. At least now you can understand that there's a gray area in between and systems all over in there. And I could show you a timeline and I could show you and draw out the various different graphs of where some of these games are if you don't include hacks or personal rules or something like that. And you have a great deal of excellent systems within this. You also have systems that are mixed. Let me give you an example. You have a system like Fantasy Flight's audacious and absolutely asinine last Star Wars game that they did, where they were so incredulous that they released three source books that were basically a lot of the same copied data about three different aspects of the world, your force users and your scoundrels and your Empire/Republic, that kind of stuff. Three different books, much of it repeated, right? Much of it repeated, very difficult for a person who's going to jump in to really sort of parse exactly which of the books they even need to really follow. And on top of all that, it actually had a pretty good rule system. I sort of like the narrative dice. I actually think that they did a good job. But what happened was it got a little muddled. And I remember there were multiple people telling me, hey man, this system's not, it's not bad. And even me, as somebody who knows this kind of stuff, was looking at that just going like, really? Like, we had to separate it into three things, and it feels a little bit like a cash grab, almost like when you buy a video game. Imagine if you bought the next Star Wars game and one side was the Republic and you had to buy a completely different package to get the Empire and another package to just get the dudes in between who are caught up like the fucking Ewoks and smashed to shit. So now you understand role-playing and role-playing, left and right, and where they sit. Now, a lot of people will have issues with this. I've seen it before where people, again, don't like those words because they feel in some way one is better than the other, and it certainly is, and I'll argue that forever, that for you, one of these will probably end up being better than the other, at least for learning. And now that we've talked a little bit about the basic roles themselves, R-O-L-E and R-O-L-L, I do also want to talk about how to understand what pen and paper, D&D, all of these systems really are. One of my friends and I, when we were younger, were talking about role-playing with a friend, and I was trying to explain to them and say, hey man, we want you to come and we want you to try this, and they just could not grasp it. One day we were over and we were playing Monopoly. And as we continued to play Monopoly, one of my friends made a funny voice and he was like, you know, you passed my park place and you need to pay me, blah, blah, blah. And he did some old crotchety man's voice. Well, this was the guy that we had wanted to actually join our game for a while. And I was like, do you realize that you are really only one step away from basically playing Dungeons and Dragons, at least the most basic part? And we'll use Dungeons and Dragons, werewolf. Well, you're going to use all these interspersed as the same kind of meaning, but a pen and paper game. And they were like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, think about it this way, man. In a way, your stats would be, or your character would be your car, whatever icon you have. Your stats would be the various different hotels and things that you own. Your money would be your inventory. And you could even say your hotels and motels would be your inventory, because this is a very basic connection between them. But I was like, that's really all it is, except that you would take on the role that, for example, if you have a house rule in Monopoly, which I've seen a lot of people do, where it's like if somebody's really doing poorly, they won't make them pay or they'll give them a deal of some kind. Now, a lot of people are cutthroat at Monopoly, right? That's the different character, though. Are you cutthroat or are you not? Boom, you just roleplayed. That is honestly what it is. Think about it that way. That is quite easily what it is. So whenever anybody asks me, anybody asks me what's pen and paper role playing, I usually always just say, well, it's like Monopoly without the, you know, without the board. That's really what it is. And for some people, it's with the board, depending on if they use miniatures. So describing that for people, understanding role playing and role playing, and understanding really that first minimum step that's required that a lot of people do can remove a lot of what I consider to be sort of a social fear when it comes to role playing and the fear of not being like those big YouTube streamers or Twitch streamers. Let me tell you right now, that kind of D&D that you even see most of the time, that's not for the majority of people even close to what they normally play. Many times it's either more serious or more technical minded. Maybe it's more, you know, just overall a more or less communal group, maybe something where they're not joking and ribbing with each other so much. It really depends on the GM slash DM and the people who want to get together. And I know people who, when they would see something like that, they'd be like, dude, I don't even want to play in that group. Not because they think that group's bad or they've got their pinky up. It's just that doesn't fit the overall feeling. It's just like when somebody likes futuristic fictions and somebody likes fantasy fictions. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just different sides of the same thing, which is basically pen and paper. So now you sort of understand the basics of this. You understand sort of the two hierarchies, your role playing and where they may fit and where you are. Easiest way to look at it is if you've ever played a board game and you've ever sort of taken on the feeling of a character, you've played a video game and you've played a little bit outside the rules. For example, you played a Mass Effect and maybe there's different conversation pieces in the Mass Effect that you didn't really agree with. So you sort of played it meta. You were like, you know what? I don't like this character. Regardless if in the game Shepard likes this character, I have chosen not to like this character. So every choice that I get, they won't fit perfectly. But every choice I get, I'm going to choose the choice that hurts this character the most. I don't like Ashley. So every choice I make, even though he likes Ashley in most of these choices, I'm going to make to make sure that she gets the worst end of the stick. That is quite literally role-playing. That is what you're doing. And all you're doing is trying to move that over to pen and paper. You're removing the graphical interface and somebody's explaining it to you. And so getting into this and onboarding newcomers, you can use all this. If they play video games, explain it like that. Tell them, have you ever done this? Have you ever done an action game? Have you ever really taken on the role of anything else in any other kind of entertainment? And if they have, that's most likely the way it works. Now, when it comes to really far to the left ROLE players, you have the people who are really theatrical. I've actually noticed that for them, they can get caught up in not understanding why they can't freeform something. And what I usually do is explain to them, imagine somebody writing the play as you're doing it and changing it and giving you different, you know, different words to use. And many people have had that. Maybe they've written their own play and they're like, you know, these words don't fit. That's really all pen and paper is, right? Is changing it. Except here sometimes, instead of saying the director comes in and says, I don't like this wording. I don't like the way this is going. It's dice sometimes choosing it or the game world choosing maybe a slightly different location that you're in, as well as maybe a slightly different character. And you, as the theatrical person, have to decide how to augment what you're going to say and make it fit the actual situation. That's it from either side. You've got that from your role-playing side where ROLE and then your ROLL side, your really crunchy side. We've got the Monopoly board. And that's really how to get people into D&D. It usually works. If you find difficulty getting somebody in, I got to tell you also, man, don't trick them. Don't invite them over and then be like, hey, we're going to play a game. I've seen that. That might sound really weird, but I've actually seen that happen quite a number of times, especially recently with the advent of it becoming very popular. Everybody wants their own Twitch channel, right? That's just sort of the way it is. Everybody wants to stream. And of course, I'm coming at this as a YouTuber, so I'm bringing this up. Somebody else may not be a YouTuber, and they may not even think of these kind of things. That's fine, because as I discussed at the starting, however you look at the problem, you're coloring it a little bit with your own experiences. And in a way, you're playing a role right then. So now you sort of understand the different ways in which role-playing can be described. ROLE, ROLL, as well as super crunchy and not very crunchy, your thespian versus your Monopoly player. So you've got an idea of what you want to do, but you don't know which rule system to go with. You're going to hear a lot of people suggest you various different rule systems. I am not telling you those are wrong or right. What I am telling you is understanding your own desire and your own interests, I think, is probably very high up on the list of importance when deciding. So let's say you go to Amazon and you see a generic D6 fairly crunchy, but really generic rule set. It allows you to basically make whatever world you want fairly easily with a lot of dice rolls, that kind of stuff. And then you see another one, we'll call it Warhammer 40,000. Let's say you see a Warhammer 40,000 book. Now, depending on the person, one of those may interest them far more than the other, even if it's more difficult to get into. Let me describe something to you. A lot of D6 rules are very easy to understand. Card deck rules, something that I use a lot of times, very easy to understand. However, many times the basic rules help you build the world. Yet, in a Warhammer 40,000, the world, right, sort of came first. And the rules have continually been regurgitated multiple times as they've changed them because they are so complex and because they have a need to fit in all these different fictions. So they're really coming at it from different angles. However, one may light your fire. And I always tell people this, man, when your passion is stoked and when your interest is high, your ability, and this is backed up by science, your ability to understand and to parse things is far higher. So one person may look at the D6 world and the D6 rules and say, I can build a world with this. I like the bones, right? I like the skeleton. Great. They should probably get that. Another person may look at Warhammer 40,000. They may see that picture of a space marine, and it may, like me as a child, absolutely ignite their interest, and they may be able to parse something that is more difficult and lore thick like Warhammer. I am not telling you to do that. And Warhammer could be, you could consider, a sort of heavy-handed example in this particular happenstance. I would say it probably is, but replace any others. A lot of times when you get these generic systems, they work great, but they don't always have a good fiction with them. Even if they say, oh, this is superheroes, you sort of get it, and it's like generic superheroes, right? It doesn't have that feeling of a Marvel or the feeling of a DC. Or you go to Future and it doesn't have a feeling of a Warhammer 40,000 or a Fading Suns, because really it's more about that genericness. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it may not be for you, where, again, those more difficult to understand or difficult to parse, but really brain-lighting situations help you. I am not telling you to go out there and buy that if you see that. I'm not telling you to buy either one of them. What I'm trying to describe to you is the understanding that the passion and the desire you may have for one of these may end up making it easier to continue forward. And you need to decide that on your own. Don't rush out to start playing a game. Like I've stated before, you're going to see that where people in a weird way sort of rush out to role play. It's not a rush, man. Instead, you need to sort of decide how this is going to work. It's not the same thing as grabbing a board game, even though I use Monopoly as a good example, but it's not the same thing as where one person can describe every single thing in a role playing game, because Monopoly has a board. Dungeons and Dragons, for the most part, will not have a board. Now, it may have miniatures, which I think for a lot of people does allow them to solidify where they are, where the more open-ended, some people call it theater of the mind, which I don't know where that came from, but prior to theater of the mind, we just called that Dungeons and Dragons. So either way, miniatures or not miniatures, board in front of you or not board in front of you. These are all different aspects and you need to decide. And you can certainly post to me or tweet to me and ask me my opinion of, you know, what game might work for you and what you like. But I would say look at the things that you've liked to do in the past. If you are a big theatrics person, if you've always liked being an actor and you've always felt that social dynamic and you've enjoyed that and you're okay with a little loosey-goosey and a little edgier seat kind of thing, hell man, there are certain games that are just perfect for that. But if you're a little bit more of the type of person who wants to be all, you know what, man, I need to know what this rule does and what this rule does and how exactly far does this thing shoot and how far does this thing shoot, then there's other rule systems for that. The next thing I want to talk about for a second is comradeship, partnership, the group. This is super important. It can't be more important. The reason why I've left this here is because I'm hoping that the people who care have got this far and are finally going, oh, he's finally going to talk about this. The group and why it matters. In most Dungeons and Dragons games, in most fantasy role-playing games, in most pen and paper games of any kind, even online using Discord, usually the group is working together towards some particular goal. Usually. We're going to stick with that now because this is for sort of newcomers. When you are deciding that you want to play a game, I will say this, pick the people that you want to join up with you who are sort of like-minded in their overall desires to move forward into role-playing. If one person is incredibly rules-heavy, they may not really mesh with a group that, let's say, is two other people that are more flight, in, you know, edge of their seat and don't really or aren't really bothered by complete chaos that may occur. Those kind of things matter, guys, because I'm telling you, a group member that's unhappy with the rule system, whatever rule system you're using, is worse than a bad DM. I mean that. In fact, good players can sometimes make a bad DM much better because, in fact, I would say for the most part they do, because their ability to jive and sort of build the world out and ask the proper questions to trigger the DM, which I'll talk about later, which are like your trigger questions, your questions that you can ask, those things are really important. So just be aware. If you've got two or three of your friends and you're thinking of doing this, you know, be aware. This is sort of one of those things that you might want to look at, is like, do we all agree on this kind of overall style of gameplay? And you can make all these decisions. You can just look at it and go, are we more role players on the left, you know, where we're more theatric? Are we more ROLL players? What kind of games do we like? And then sort of decide from there. Now, to choose the player and the GM, who is what? This is very simple. A lot of people feel that one or the other gets sort of jacked. And I got to tell you, as somebody who has been a game master and a player occasionally, but a game master for more than two decades, I can tell you, game master has a blast as well. They get to play multiple characters. And if they want, they can play one character as in-depth or many characters more in-depth than the player characters themselves, because they're really always in the action, or for the most part, always thinking or engaging in the action, even if they take on the game world itself as their own character. So when you decide this, I would say, let everybody take a turn if they want to. I think that's important, because you never know. Somebody who you may not think is the best, maybe they're a rules lawyer kind of person, and you'll hear these all the time. Somebody who's like, you know, fireballs can only move exactly this far. Well, guess what? If they like that, but they're also very good at explaining things, they might be the perfect game master for you. And this can change with games too. I have friends who, let's say, aren't the greatest at describing futuristic kinds of locations and characters and people, all that kind of stuff. Characters and people, the same thing, but you get my drift. And then they might be really good at medieval, and so you might switch them out. They might be good with one rule system, which is superheroes, which is sort of flamboyant. Superheroes, remember, when I have a gun and I shoot it, most people know exactly what's going to happen, right? Because you can see it. Superheroes and magic in particular, both of those can throw a lot of GMs for sort of a loop, because the rules are a little bit chaotic on top of the already chaotic loop and world that you've created. And having to deal with that can be a lot. So just sort of decide and group together and give everybody a chance. To sum up so far, we've sort of looked at the two different types of player, the gray area in between, how to explain it to somebody, even to yourself, Monopoly without a board kind of thing, and sort of understand theatrical or maybe doing theater, but having the director be more engaged and active during the play. Those are your two types. And then, of course, the various different rule systems and making sure that everybody's passion is ignited. Because I'm going to tell you right now, the easiest way to look at Dungeons & Dragons is it is a group storytelling effort. And you decide the amount of chaos, right? And the amount of chaos is in any random dice you may roll, whether it be your amount of damage you do to if you see a random creature to what a bad guy does. Randomness can even be, you know, the game master themselves. But you really have to understand how to work together. And you really have to understand that it is a storytelling moment to not take too much from everybody else. At times you're going to stand up and you're going to be the main character, and other times those other people will be the main characters, and they'll be sort of the poignant part of the story. And sometimes the GM will be explaining the game world, and they'll be the moment where everybody's looking at them and they're the crux. And to share that, and by sharing it, it's actually better. By sharing it and let everybody sort of understand, it's better. And that's what the group, and why I wanted to talk about the group, and I wanted to talk about making sure that everybody sort of understands where you're going. Because it can be quite difficult to, and this is something you're probably hearing right now from various groups, it can be quite difficult not only to get a group together, but keep them together. There's multiple reasons. Two of the main reasons, real life / time. That happens, right? Somebody has a kid, boom. Usually what that means is the death of that character in a game. That is just what it means. Even if over time they have more time at some point, a baby takes a lot of your life, a new job, moving away. Less so now because of Discord. But the end all be all of it is that every person has a particular amount of resources to give out. This is another reason why I say make sure that if you're getting to sort of understand D&D, even if you're not, to understand that sometimes one person may have more time on their hands and they might be the DM for a while. It doesn't even have to be a different game. It could be the same game if you're okay with that, but if it's not, you could have them be a DM for another game while everybody sort of gets their lives together. But one of the main problems is resource. We can call it money, we can call it time, whatever it may be. You could even call it passion for that particular game, okay? So that's one of the main ones. The other is the group dynamic that I talked about earlier. And I can't describe to you guys how bad it can be to have a bad player. We've been really blessed because we don't vet players, but we don't really invite somebody that we don't think would work with our group. Like if they're super heavy rules lawyer, you know, we're like, this might not be the best game for you. Maybe we'll have you go, you know, come and play during this other game or something like that. It just depends, right? And those two things are vital because they will change over time. People's relationships change over time. People's energy levels change over time. Their resources change, and that can change the group dynamic. Those two feed into each other. But when you sit down, understand everybody's got a particular amount of time and they've chosen to sit down with you, and never really take somebody else's resources from them. This is one of the things that I feel, and this bothers me in my game, so I make sure it's known. If people show up, cell phones are turned off. Now, that may sound rude or whatever, but I'm like, listen, first of all, humanity got away for centuries upon, well, thousands and thousands and thousands of years without cell phones, and we're here. So I don't know necessarily if you need your cell phone on at all times. You could always put it on vibrate. But I do like to tell people, hey, my resource I'm spending right now is energy building a game world, and my time that I'm spending away from doing other things, I want to put it and invest it in D&D, and I would like for others to do so. So a lot of people say no cell phones. Some people like snacks at the table. Some people don't. All that kind of stuff, right? But another one is just understanding that people's time is important. If you come together on Discord and you say it's going to be 4 p.m., be there at 4 p.m. or earlier. That's just the way it should be. Now, everybody's going to understand that somebody can be late, but this is sort of a communal thing that's beyond even a video game, guys, because a video game, everything is done for you, right? The lobby is put together for you. It tests the ping for you. It tests everything. The ping is your relationship, right? It tests the ping and it says, hey, our relationship is good. It's only 35 milliseconds. That's a great relationship. Well, guess what, man? In Dungeons and Dragons, all that shit is out the window. It's all upon you guys to do that. And I think it's vital that when people get together, that social element of understanding that somebody's time, you know, when they show up, that let's say at the end of the last game, you guys leveled up your characters, that you take care of that. And you make sure that when you guys all show back up, you guys are all ready. I had a friend who was actually telling me recently that one of the major problems with their group is that they would spend a good amount of time every other game, you know, leveling up characters and stuff because the people weren't paying attention, or, you know, or they weren't doing it prior. They weren't, you know, taking that time and sort of making sure that the resources of others weren't being burned because of their laziness. And that's what we'll call it, just straight up. That is what it is, laziness. So I think those are some of your basic points. We'll solidify these as I continue forward. But again, role-playing versus role-playing, understanding passion and what drives you to choose the two different kinds of rule sets that you may choose, and the thousands of gray areas in between, as I hope I made that clear, because I'm sure somebody's going to have an issue with this. I want to make sure it's understandable or understood that there's thousands of different rule systems in between. And understanding how to explain it to a friend if you want to play, or if they're trying to explain it to you, and you can ask them now. Maybe you've had a friend who's playing Dungeons and Dragons. You've always wanted to ask why or what it was, and now you can say, hey, is this sort of, you know, as a generic way of describing it, is this crunchy? You know, is this a lot of numbers and a lot of rolling? Or is this more of a theater social kind of aspect? And exactly where you're going from there. And understanding, of course, that there's thousands of different mixtures in between. I've seen people take a very rules light game and make it quite crunchy and roll a lot. And then I've seen other people take a very crunchy world, but with a good, I would say, overarching theme and lore, and sort of remove a lot of those roles and, They've removed a lot of them and made it work out pretty well for them. So it just all depends. So those are my things I want you to take away from this. ROLE, ROLL, like I stated, crunch versus not, passion, understanding group dynamic, not burning other people's resources, how to talk a little bit about Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing, and understanding what rule system might work for you. That's all I'm going to cover in this podcast because I think short and sweet is the way to do it. Anyway, if you like these, if you want more data, please ping it on Patreon. Or if you're in the Discord, I'm going to make a special section. This is the patron only for a little bit. So if you do have a question and you want to jump in and you want to ask a question about D&D or you want me to discuss something, feel free to ping me there and in the channel or, like I said, on Patreon. And I will make sure to post that and you know, try to get those answers done and try to clarify, you know, as we move forward, I'll concise these down a bit. And then at some point, we'll be playing a game. Anyway, that's it for me. Thanks, everybody. If you get a chance, thumbs this up once it's on YouTube. Thumbs it down if you dislike it. Share it, spread it. Remember that hashtag, which was podcast one. Peace out.